snarky. Adjective, describes a witty mannerism, personality, or behavior that is a combination of sarcasm and cynicism. Usually accepted as a complimentary term.
Catapult of propaganda.
Alien race to come down and threaten us.
The military industrial complex.
A highly funded yet unofficial government agency. Take the red pill.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier.
Welcome to PID Radio. I'm Derek Gilbert.
And I am Taylor Kent,
otherwise known as the Snarky Avenger. He's sitting in for Sharon tonight, who's graciously stepped aside and is sitting out on the couch right now, I think watching a special about the Battle of Thermopylae or something, or barbarians overrunning Rome. Anyway, Taylor has traveled down from Minnesota and is joining us in the bunker tonight. Welcome.
Yes, thank you. And I like the bunker.
A lot of white in here.
Yeah.
But, it's a rental bunker.
It's a rent, right.
Yeah, so we can't do a whole lot with the decor, but it serves. So, well, thank you for coming all the way down here to see us. This is an honor and a real pleasure to make your acquaintance and meet you face-to-face after the times that we've talked and the emails we've exchanged and all the times listening to your show. So, appreciate you coming down here.
It is for me, too, and, I'm glad the opportunity presented itself to come down to the St. Louis area and take the extra drive to come over and see you guys.
Especially because we've got Sonic Drive-In here.
That's right. I see all the ads in my area, and we don't have it.
Yeah, so... fueled with cherry limeade and banana cream pie shake, we're ready to do a show here. I figured for this hour, just to talk a little bit about why it is we do the podcasts that we do. We each do different kinds of shows. Sharon and I typically focus on the news of the day and then try to analyze it through the lens of faith, basically. And, of course, faith in Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior and the spiritual war that he described, that Paul described in Ephesians especially. Your ministry is a little bit different, though. Who is your target listener?
I think a lot about that, and I'm not sure I know for sure who my target listener is. Because I talk about, the average zombie fan probably would enjoy my show, but I talk about a variety of different things, but I guess, it's probably the average disenfranchised Christian.
And we should mention before we get too far in, your podcast, Snark Infested Waters, is available at what website? What's the web address?
Well, you can get to it from snarkyavenger.com, or now the actual podcast site has been moved to misfitchristians.net/podcast/snarkinfestedwaters.
Misfitchristians.net.
Yep.
All right, we'll talk about that website in a little bit.
Okay.
So, disenfranchised Christians, who falls into that category?
Well, myself to begin with. it could be a lot of people, but basically it's people, a lot of the people I'm thinking about are like science fiction and fantasy and horror fans who are Christians but feel like they're being told by the church that they can't be, or that there's some disconnect, or somehow they're missing, or really anybody who is... a Christian who feels like they don't belong in the, quote, Christian institutions of today, I guess would be, how I look at disenfranchised.
So you, you've been a fan of horror movies, zombie films, a lot longer than you've been a Christian, is that right?
More or less, yeah.
Okay. What kind of sense did you get about your... love of film and video game or PC game when you try to talk about that with fellow Christians? Say your typical Christians at church.
Well, my experience has been kind of mixed, and it's good and it's bad. Some of the churches I've been at have been fine, a lot of the more traditional churches where I've actually tried to approach people or, not even approach people to talk about it, but you just bring up, I was reading Stephen King's new book and I thought, this was in there and it was really cool. And they're like, you read Stephen King? Oh, no, there's something wrong. The one that got me the most, now that I think about it, was Harry Potter.
Oh, yeah.
So, I don't personally have a big issue with the Harry Potter books. People want to read them, read them, you know. I think, it, especially as an adult, most of us can discern the difference here. And if you're a practicing Christian, I think you can get, okay, yeah, we're not going to go out and become wizards and witches and do this and play this game. It's just fiction. It's fun to read, et cetera. Yeah, for kids, you have to use discretion. You know, if you're letting your kids read it, well, you know, there's a lot of good opportunities for education there. But I actually got into some battles with people, and it wasn't intended to be battles, where people were questioning my faith. Because I was willing to say, it's just a book.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why are we in essence, if you're really all that worried about it, why are you out there doing book burnings and all these other things that are basically just giving more attention to the book if you really don't want anybody to read it? Don't read it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, yeah, Paul made, I think, a good point about that when he said, look, if you want to, you know, eat meat that's been, you know, sacrificed to idols,
right,
that's fine, but don't do it if it's going to lead someone else astray.
Right.
If you're going to choose to honor these days, fine, but don't make it a requirement that everyone else honor these days.
Right.
And, yeah, we do see a lot of that in the church. Harry Potter's a good example. I'd say that there's a even a subset, which, well, in fact, as a personal example, Sharon and I ran into this at an otherwise wonderful church in the St. Louis area, the church that really kind of opened my eyes to the truth, the literal truth of Genesis 6 and the giants in the land and, right, and how that was all going to play into the end times, you know, genetic modification and all that. Never heard that before. Never heard that before. But at this church. But they were very legalistic in that they believed and taught that any music with guitar in it was evil. And I had to step back and say, now, I don't see the piano in the Bible, and yet we use that in church on Sunday morning.
Right.
What's the difference here? Who made this determination? On what do you base this? Hair, length of hair.
Oh,
Sharon's hair. Not long enough. Got to let that hair grow out.
Oh,
and got to wear a skirt.
Right.
So, yeah, it was adding to what we were, you know, given as commands in the Bible.
Right.
Now, there are things about pop culture, whether it be music or certain forms of entertainment, that really aren't appropriate and really do send messages that really don't edify us.
Right.
And could stay away from us. And I've always been kind of interested in your fascination with zombie movies, because that is one area, and frankly, Sharon and I watch monster movies and horror movies, too. So, but I kind of wanted your take on this as to how you see an appreciation of zombie movies being consistent with a Christian walk.
Well, now you have to ask the hard questions. You know, I've tried to figure some of these things out in the past. Okay, God, why did you make me this guy who likes science fiction and zombies and horror and, you know, and I believe it. Part of it is, this is just part of how God made me. These are things that just appeal to me. Yeah, I have a taste for kind of the darker side, and I have to be careful with that. I admit that. You know, you're walking a thin line there. You can easily go too far one way or the other. For me, I think one of the things that has, well, probably driven me more, at least in the idea of to secular entertainment, secular pop culture, is just the complete lack of any really high value stuff in the Christian world.
And high value, you mean high production value?
High production value, or even really good writing for that matter. There's so many spin-offs. Not to say there isn't some good stuff, but, you know, comparatively speaking, then again, the good stuff, I question, why aren't these authors writing with the same message in a way that would get into the hands of a secular audience who probably need to hear this more than those people who know the Lord, for that matter. And I am completely lost on what I was talking about. Zombie movies.
Zombie
okay.
movies.
Well, I have talked about on my show how I think that kind of the zombie apocalypse and the whole idea, there's something for me in my head that clicks together when I think of zombies and Christianity and the whole idea that In fact, I can't remember the exactly how I phrased it, but the idea that, you know, we all kind of start out dead. You know, we're dead in our sins. It's part of the fall. And we really don't gain life till we meet Christ.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think of those of us who have been redeemed are kind of like the survivors in the zombie movie. And the people who haven't are the zombies. And they're basically looking for something to nourish them.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't know what they're looking for because basically they're rotting, blind, deaf, dumb, whatever. And as far as they're concerned, the way to get, they want what we have. They want life.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to get it by eating us.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and what is our response to that in the zombie movies? Well, we shoot them in the head because, well, that's what you do. But if you really look at the, you know, look at what goes on in Christian circles more often than not, we do the equivalent. We say to these people, you know, it's like, okay, there's a bunch of zombies or whatever, sinners, whatever you want to call them. We're telling them, oh, well, you got to go do this and you got to go do that. We're doing the equivalent of shooting them in the head, in essence, turning them completely off,
mm-hmm.
guaranteeing they will never get the life they're seeking or they will go someplace else to find it.
That's interesting. Yeah. Zombie movie as metaphor for modern American churchianity.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you make a really good point, though. Because the many facets of the Christian church are almost intentionally antagonistic to the culture.
Right.
And we see that that American churchianity is in some ways, some aspects of it are almost as, let me put it this way, a lot more like the Roman Catholic Church than they would ever care to admit.
Right.
And I go back to the church that we attended for a while, which had these additional rules about how you were to dress and the kind of music you were to listen to, which is legalism, which is, I would argue, one of the main failings of the Roman Catholic Church. It adds rules to the salvation that we have as a free gift from Jesus Christ and his atoning sacrifice. You know, it's Christ plus is what it is. And a lot of American evangelical Christianity is the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And by these rules, we are almost, again, deliberately antagonistic toward the culture.
Right.
You can't do this. You can't watch this. You can't listen to that. Remember, though, when Paul went to Athens and engaged the Athenians on Mars Hill, he used the words of their own philosophers and poets.
Right, exactly.
Now, if he were in modern-day America as a Christian trying to preach, would he use the words of Stephen King, for example, to make his point in a way that non-Christians could apprehend and comprehend?
Right.
I don't know.
Well, I you know, one of the things I'm really about is being real and being relevant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can get in this big argument about in the world and of the world and all these nice catchphrases that seem to float around out there. But if I can't present the gospel in a way that someone is going to understand it, if I can't speak their language, you know, if I go to Africa, I think I heard Guile Malone say this, and it was a brilliant statement. You know, I can go to Africa with all the Bibles and know all the scripture I want, but if I don't speak the language, it's useless.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, for me, I believe, you know, the ministry I'm called to really is to reach these groups of people who are into science fiction and fantasy and horror and anime, etc., which is, if any you know anything about it, is a very dark place.
Mm-hmm.
The realms of fandom are loaded with atheists and worse. And, you know, paganism reigns supreme because, you know, they consider themselves intellectual. So, oh, well, this can't be right. Plus, so many of them have been burned by this judgmentalism.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can't go in and talk their language, they're never going to listen to you. And I think that's part of, you know, why I am the way I am and why I like the stuff I like. I can, you know, I can talk the horror language. Yeah, it doesn't mean I like everything horror. Oh, by no means. You know, I'm not interested in snuff films like Hostel or, you know, that's just
Wolf Creek.
Yeah.
Saw 2, Saw 3.
Yeah.
Yeah. There are, some very dark messages that are coming out into the culture today, and obviously they're making money, or that we wouldn't see these splatter films making such big money. Even movies like Kill Bill, Volume 1, Volume 2, and Quentin Tarantino's forthcoming movie, Grindhouse with Robert Rodriguez, is an example of how violence is being glorified.
Right.
Even to an extent, 300.
Yeah.
The art of the movie is undeniable. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's an awful lot of splatter done to, I guess this is an homage, if you will, to the graphic novel style of the creator, Frank Miller.
Yeah.
And a lot of kids are seeing this stuff and are thinking, wow, this is really, cool. They're seeing it in video games and in PC games. Especially the first-person shooters, which I find very disturbing. Sharon finds it very disturbing. They are doing something, and we've speculated and theorized that there may be a spiritual component to this, that the virtual bloodletting that takes place in these games or in these movies has the same sort of spiritual power as the literal bloodletting that took place in the pagan sacrifices of years gone by. So how do we reach out to these people who are drawn to this form of entertainment, these games, these movies, these graphic novels? And this is the world that you're immersing yourself in, huh?
To some degree, anyway. I mean, I have to be careful, too, because it's very easy to get caught up in these things and to go, to take that step. There's a line, I like a good creature feature. I'm not interested in slasher flicks or any, short of maybe something done as a thriller where, some of the stuff Morgan Freeman has done, or Seven, or something like that, where you're not, it's not really, it's not just a gore fest, and it's not just torturing people. There's a story behind it. But, one, we got to be able to talk the language. Two, if we want to talk about how Christians can reach these people, we have to, if you want to talk about it from an entertainment standpoint, well, you have to make an offering that these people are going to be interested in.
Mm-hmm.
The science fiction that has been made in terms of films and shows in the Christian media is pathetic.
There's been just a very few books that I can think of that would be described as Christian science fiction. And frankly, the best one I can think of off the top of my head is The Armageddon Strain, which Sharon wrote.
Right.
And I can't think of any movies except, I don't know if you want to call Left Behind Christian science fiction. I don't know. I wouldn't.
No.
I can't honestly think of any movies that fit that description. What have you seen out
there? Well, there's Deceived, which was made by Cloud 10 Pictures.
Okay,
which actually Tom Horn was a consultant on. Mm-hmm. Who was in that? I can't remember off the top of my head. And they have made a few, because they did, Cloud 10 did the Left Behind films, which, let's face it, all it taught us was that the Antichrist is Scottish because of the bad accent they gave Nikolai. But They actually made a series of their own end time films, Revelation. I can't remember all the titles. Revelation was the best one, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And those had a more science fiction-y theme. But the other thing that seems to get lost in the mix is, one, all your science fiction doesn't have to revolve around the end times.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, keep in mind, it's fiction.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay to write, a civilization that's 100 years in the future. Whether that's really going to happen or not, you're exploring ideas. You're not necessarily predicting what's really going to happen. Left Behind is not gospel.
Yeah. Shock.
Yeah. And not everything that gets produced story-wise needs to be.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it's production quality. If you're going to reach them with video, you're going to have to put out quality video. Mm-hmm. If you're going to reach them with books, well, you're going to have to you're going to have to be willing to go some places you might not want to go.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to have to realize, the other thing that I think Christians have to realize to reach people in some of these groups is you're going to have to be willing to admit sometimes you don't have all the answers.
And that's true. There are things that are going to be revealed to us, when it's right. time. We'll probably have pre and post, pre and post trib people arguing on the way up.
Right. No, this isn't the rapture. No, yeah. Come on.
we actually found that ourselves when we were dealing with the publisher that put out Sharon's first two novels. They were just really puzzled as to why, you know, crop circles would be showing up in Winds of Evil, for example.
Right.
She didn't actually write any, aliens, in air quotes, into that novel. But when we pitched that as part of the ongoing series, they were really confused. And that's why Mike Heiser hasn't been able to find a mainstream Christian right. publisher for The Facade. They just didn't want to, go there.
Right.
So there's a problem there. I would argue, frankly, that the best science fiction, Christian science fiction movie that I've seen is Signs by M. Night Shyamalan with Mel Gibson. There's a lot of Christian symbolism.
Oh,
it's not
definitely.
Overt.
Yeah.
But that's as close to high-quality Christian science fiction as we've seen in the culture. Where do we... video games, PC games. The only Christian big release that I've heard about is the Left Behind video game, which has been criticized, and I think rightly so, for showing players that the way to deal with the forces of the Antichrist is with an automatic weapon.
Right.
Where do we go in the gaming world to engage the hardcore gamers with things that get them thinking about matters of eternal consequence?
Well,
do we just need to get some Christians who can actually write some good video games?
Well, the first thing is you got to write good games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for everything that's been said about the just bad content in, what is it? I can't remember the name of the Left Behind game. But half the people I've talked to who've seen it or played it have said it's just a crappy game. It's poorly put together. It doesn't play well. Well, okay, that's the first problem. Because gamers are used to a pretty high quality standard when it comes to games, especially those who are into RTS or real-time strategy and those into FPSs, first-person shooters, which, yeah, I play, and, yeah, they are disturbing, but I try to play the ones where you fight monsters.
See, I can even deal with that, where you're trying to shoot something that's not human. The ones that bother me are the ones that are more, and again, this is me with the tinfoil headphones on, think are actually recruiting or perhaps training tools for the military.
Oh, like the Army Online or whatever that
is. Well, that one flat out is an Army training tool. But I think there are others out there which are aimed at desensitizing kids to actually pulling the trigger on another human being. There are statistics to show that when the Army switched from shooting, for training soldiers with bullseye targets to human silhouettes, the percentage of soldiers who found it impossible to shoot at another soldier dropped significantly. And now that they can use SIMS to train soldiers, I think, there's a psychological and perhaps a spiritual component there that's overcome by getting immersed in this simulation of reality.
Right.
And as the games become more real, we're seeing the... we're seeing things like the Columbine Massacre a few years ago, and I think we may see more of that. Now, is the game totally to blame? Probably not.
Right.
But what is the spiritual connection there?
Right.
And then, how do we reach out to people who are in that world with something that is going to make them stop and think? What is it you're really doing? Where does this eventually lead?
Right. I was actually involved with a group, I can't name who was in it because it might still happen, that were looking at building a Christian MMORPG or massively multiplayer online game. We had gotten to the point of actually looking at selecting an engine, talking about the storyline and the content. And the thing, when I got involved with it, I really felt like this wasn't the right thing to do, and this was why. And this is something that kind of eats at me. We've kind of reduced Christianity, for the most part, to being family safe. You know, and I'm not against family safe material, but family safe material isn't going to appeal to the hardcore gamer, the hardcore fan. Mm-hmm. We kind of have to meet them where they are, which is why, you know, we were talking about this MMO and it's like, yeah, this would be really cool. And there were the two big strikes against it. One, are we really going to attract the people who need to be, who need the message? Mm-hmm. And the other is, are we going to get so caught up in running this thing that we never actually do any ministry? So what we kind of came out of it was, you know, we would be, and I think this is where God wanted some of the people who were involved in that. We would be better off going into the games that exist and using those to reach people rather than. And I think that's what it is with a lot of this media. You know, I think there's a place where I think there'd be a demand for it. And I think writers could write good Christian horror, good Christian science fiction, without just labeling it family safe. I mean, actually tackling real issues. You look at a lot of the good horror writers, not, you know, the average splatter film, slasher book, story stuff. And there are a lot of those people who are wrestling with real questions about God and why there's pain and what goes on in the universe. And they're doing it through their work. And, you know, yeah, most of them are humanists or atheists or agnostics at best. And a lot, you know, we get the humanistic take on it. Mm-hmm. But if we went out as writers and wrote those same kind of stories, and we're going to have to make some concessions in, you know, yeah, there's going to have to be some blood and, you know,
might be some swear words.
Might be some swear words.
And not all the bad guys will be, you know, atheists, and not all the good guys will be Christians.
Right. Exactly.
So a little more reflective of reality.
Yeah. And try to tackle those same questions and present an alternate view.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, we might have to do things like have monsters in our books, you know, and tackle the ideas of vampires and werewolves and, you know, and remember, this is fiction, but, you know, as Derek and Sharon have said more times than I can recall right off, when you read a story, when you watch a movie, there's a part of your brain that shuts down. That's kind of that cognitive filter that says this, you know, it's like, oh, this is fiction, so whatever. You know,
the medical term is the BS detector.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the BS detector, yeah.
But let's use that to our advantage, because if their BS detector is saying, well, it's Christian's crap, well, if we present it in entertainment, maybe we'll get past that.
Well, and that's what our hope has been with the writing that we do. And in fact, you know, interesting that you mentioned monsters. We had started a project some time back that kind of got put on the shelf when we parted ways with our original publisher, but it had gone so far as to actually get an ISBN number, an anthology of horror stories written from a Christian perspective called 13 from the Grave.
Cool.
And that may still happen at some point, although we've published a couple of them to the internet in years past. I wrote a story about vampires. Which was really eye-opening when I did a word search through the Bible for the word blood. How often blood comes up. Blood is the life. You know, life is in the blood. Like, wow, well, maybe that has something to do with the human sacrifice required by many of the false gods, fallen angels through years past. Sharon did a couple of very good, very creepy stories about those that dabble with delivering messages from the other side, you know, the guys like John Edward who you know, profess to hear from the dead, you know, other stories, ghosts, you know, and I actually had one that was entered in and won like a, you know, third prize in a Halloween writing contest, which dealt with the Wendigo.
Cool.
Native American myth of, which struck me as being awfully similar in description to the Nephilim. So, anyway, it can be done. Yep. And I'm certainly not the most gifted writer out there. Sharon is, but... but you're right, it can be done. Mm-hmm. And I think it can be presented in a way that doesn't say, you know, beat people over the head with, you know, this is family safe.
Or this is the message. You know, it's okay to have the message, you know, be kind of subversive mixed into your thing. You don't have to beat people over the head with the gospel. In fact, that turns more people off than, you know, even just feeding them little pieces.
Now, on the other hand, side, you've got those churches that are seeking to be, you know, seeker friendly. Rick Warren is one who, you know, tailors the message to, you know, the pop culture of the day.
Right.
In a way that basically there's not a lot of difference between, you know, going to, and I say this without having ever attended or even watched a Rick Warren church service on television, but the sense that I get from those that are engaging in this sort of seeker friendly ministries that they're trying to make going to church on Sunday morning like going to a Christian rock concert, more or less. I have watched Joel Osteen and his Lakewood Church on television a number of times, listened to his messages, and he takes a slightly different approach in which God is presented, Jesus is presented as sort of a life coach. How to live in a way that make you healthy, wealthy, and wise. And, you know, that is as unrealistic as much of what passes for Christian fiction.
Right.
It just isn't reflective of real life. If this is the way the Jesus wanted us to live, then why did Paul have physical ailments that plagued him till the day he died?
Right.
Why did all of the apostles suffer painful, violent deaths?
Yep.
It just isn't the way the gospel reads. And, you know, and when you read through the Bible, In talking about presenting a compelling story, read through the Bible with an eye to the supernatural component, especially in light of the divine counsel research that Mike Heiser and his group have done.
Yeah, definitely.
On the fallen angels and the influence they had on the nations around the ancient Hebrews and Israelites and why they were trying to wipe out God's chosen people. The struggle between the 70 fallen that were over the nations and the Israelites. And you read the Bible and you see, wow, we've got wizards and we've got demons and we've got dragons and we've got, you know,
giants
and we've got, you know, guys working magic, but the magic being put down by the supernatural intervention of God. What a creative palette we have to draw from. Where is it? And it shouldn't just be in the culture that is being generated by Christians, you know, books and videos and games. This ought to be in Sunday school.
Yeah, I agree completely. I mean, we water down the Bible. I mean, you know, I Maurice Broaddus was on my show and he brought up something that, you know, I thought about, but he said it so well. The Bible is really an R-rated book.
It really is. I mean. You know, and this is something that I really have, you know, has really it makes me laugh anymore when I hear skeptics say, oh, well, they just rewrote the Bible to make it look, you know, like Jesus was because of the Son of God. Oh. It was all cleaned up and changed in the years after. Well, really? Well, let's see. If the early Christians really cleaned up and re-edited the Bible to make things look, you know, more positive, to basically as a PR campaign for Christianity, this new religion. Why did they leave in the fact that Jesus is descended from a man who slept with his daughter-in-law, Judah and Tamar, and did it only because he thought she was a hooker?
Yeah.
You know, why did they leave in there, you know, all of the foibles and failings of the apostles? Yeah. How many times did Jesus say, how long do I have to put up with you? You guys don't get it. Even the last question they asked him in Acts chapter 1. Okay, are you going to restore the kingdom to Israel now? How stupid. He's risen from the dead and you still don't get it, you morons. And, oh no, they changed it to make everything look like, you know, this is... No, they were left in their warts and all. I mean, David, a murderer, sent one of his army captains out to his death on purpose so he could sleep with the guy's wife.
Yeah, and this was the man after God's own heart, you know?
Yes, and this is what amazes me, and God makes this point, and when you read the Bible carefully, he makes this point clear, that he uses the least likely to bring forth his message because... That way, you can't say, well, it's because this guy is so compelling. It's just a cult of personality. That's why people are following this guy. You know, this guy obviously, you know, just... No, God uses the weak, the downtrodden, the unlikely to deliver the message. And he has all the way through the Bible. Yep. And the men are presented with their failings. You ever notice how the most heroic characters in the Bible are the worst fathers?
Oh, yeah.
Abraham, yeah. All the trouble in the Middle East today. If Abraham had just been a better father to, you know.
That's right.
And David, and all. You look at the way Solomon got messed up. And Solomon with his kids, you know. Unbelievable. And yet, none of that was varnished over. None of that was taken out. They're presented right. warts and all. And yet, God worked through them and did miraculous things through these flawed, selfish, petty, lustful, deceitful, right. lying, weak men. I mean, Abraham, well, God, I know you said I'm going to have an heir, but I'm just going to go sleep with my wife's hand yeah. just to make sure.
I'll take care of that for you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when skeptics come out and say, well, the Bible has just been rewritten through the century. Well, why did they leave in all this stuff?
Well, yeah, if you're talking a PR campaign, you could have done a lot better job cleaning it up. And
yes. Yeah, yeah. And so, you know. But that gets back to what we've been talking about before, about the creative palette that Christians have to work from. And yet we're told by a lot of the leaders within our churches that you can't go there. You can't do stories that include
right.
aliens, you know, in air quotes. You can't do stories with monsters. Well, look, you know, Leviathan is in the Bible.
Yeah.
They talk about dragons in the Bible. You've got the giants who were, you know, eating people
yeah.
in Genesis 6, angels coming down and having their way with human. There is so much there that can be used. You
right.
can create such stories, you know, and still be consistent and true to the gospel. And,
well,
and I think present with those elements a story that's compelling and going to draw in non-believers who's like, wow, I never thought about this before.
Right. Well, first, we have to present the real gospel because, you know, the seeker-sensitive, seeker-friendly...
That's the other... Yes.
You know, has
Good
taken
point.
The gospel and turned it into this, you know, the life coach mentality,
yeah.
the prosperity movement.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've been a Christian for... I don't know, 7-10 years, and I don't drive a Mercedes. I haven't, you know, I firmly believe God can bless people that way.
Sure.
I mean, God is God. If he wanted me to drive a Mercedes, I could drive a Mercedes, you know? But, you know, the people I've met who are the hardcore, real hardcore followers of Christ, one, usually aren't obsessed with driving a Mercedes anyway, but two, it doesn't seem that they're generally blessed this way. I think that's just this mentality that we've come to in the American church, which is, oh, well, being American means you're a Christian just for the sake of being an American. And being an American means prosperity and all these things, so we'll wrap it in there.
Mm-hmm.
But if we talk about the real gospel is, one, scary, it's
yes.
offensive, it's revolutionary.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Christ said things like, this will turn, you know, fathers against mothers and daughters, and, you know, it was not, if you look at the time when Christ walked the earth, you know, his message was so anti-everything that was going on, and... He wasn't the popular guy. They wanted to kill him because he was standing up to the authorities at the time.
Well, and his what popularity he did have after he fed the 5,000 on the shores
right.
of the Sea of Galilee was because he was giving them bread.
Right.
And when they followed him and said, you know, we want to make you king, and Jesus basically said, you want to be my followers? You got to eat my body. You got to eat my flesh. And he was basically telling them, no, you got it wrong. This isn't about me feeding you and me healing you of your illnesses. This
right.
is not about the nanny state.
Right.
You know, this is not a political movement. This is about changing your hearts. And that's when they wanted to kill him. And that's,
right.
And so, oh, well, okay, the heck with you then. It's really interesting when you go back and read the gospel accounts of how, you know, the crowds were so huge and following him, but they weren't there following him and adoring him, because when you read closely and you see when they got angry with him, it was because he began to rebuke them
right.
for coming to him for free food
or free
and
healings
healing.
Or whatever.
Right. Take care of our physical needs and we'll make you king. And Jesus said, you got it wrong. That's not why I'm here. I'm not here to take care of your physical needs.
Right.
I'm here to take care of your spiritual needs. That's where you're sick. That's where you need the healing.
Right.
And you're right. And that's when he lost the support of the people.
Right.
They tried to kill him. And boy, you know, you don't get that the first time through the gospel necessarily. You
no.
have to read through it a couple of three times and see the political situation that was going on there. And again, it just shows the failings of us humans, and shows that again, if they'd wanted to clear, if the Gospels had been rewritten and cleaned up afterwards as a PR tool, it's like, yes, Jesus spoke so marvelously that the people were all in awe of, and everybody accepted him and got the message. And this, no, give us bread. No, I'm not here to give you bread. I'm here to, you know, my body, my blood. That's what I'm here for.
Right.
And that pissed them off.
Yeah, exactly.
That's not what they wanted to hear. And that's the American church today is giving them, you know, God wants to take care of your physical needs.
Right. Well, and it's not only wants to take care of your physical needs and make your life nice, but it's also discouraging people from doing any kind of learning on their own. You know, why should I read the Bible? I get spoon-fed my spirituality every Sunday at church.
Yeah. Boy, well, that's another whole show practically.
Yeah.
The theological ignorance of most of us. And I'm certainly not a Bible scholar by any stretch of the imagination, but I've read enough of the New Testament to get a basic grasp of what Jesus' message was.
Right.
And, you know, the basic plan of salvation. But, boy, I'll tell you what. You read some of those studies done by the Barna Group. George, Barna.org, by the way, Barna.org. You can look up his studies on American beliefs, religious beliefs, and boy, the typical American, even the typical American evangelical Christian, when you get a third of them or more who say that, yeah, Jesus probably sinned when he was on earth, like, no, that was the whole reason he was sacrificed. You don't get it. It really is frightening. We really are theologically ignorant.
Yep.
And, you know, I don't know. Is that something we can address through popular culture?
That's one of those areas where I don't know. I think you can to some degree, but there's so, you know, my take on that is, you know, the use in popular culture, or how I look at it, is I'm going to try to give you the message as concisely as possible. And the truth, you know, I'm not going to pull any punches and tell you that, yeah, it's a bowl of cherries when, you know,
you die, you go to a light, and we're all going to be in good shape on the other side.
Right,
yeah.
And you're going to be a good person. This was something, in fact, actually, on my trip down here, I was with another guy, and we happened to, I was trying to explain what PID radio was. And we got on the topic of dominionism, because, you know, he had no idea what it was. And I don't remember what I said, but basically he said, well, yeah, wasn't Jesus Christ coming back to take all the good people and basically recycle the earth? And I didn't say it then, but it clicked in my head like 5 minutes after that, going, it's not about the good people.
Mm-hmm.
Christianity is not about good.
Mm-hmm.
It's about Christ.
Yeah.
You know, the devil, and this was the line in Time Changer that makes me like the movie that was terrible, we all know. But the fact, early in the film, Gavin MacLeod's character goes to the main character and says, yeah, this is a great book you're writing on morality, but the devil's not against good morality. He's against Christ. He's against Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can be the most moral person in the world and still go to hell. Same with anybody.
Yep.
You know, I don't care how selfless you are or anything, and I don't care how bad you've been either.
Mm-hmm.
You can still be redeemed.
You know, that's an excellent point, because that's one of the most subtle lies out there, is that you don't need to be a Christian to be a good person.
Right.
And a lot of Christians will try to argue that point and say, well, yes, you do. No, that's how you're going to lose people. But regarding the receptiveness of people to this message, however it's presented, and I think you make an excellent point, it's not about good, it's about Christ.
Right.
Do you find in the culture of gamers or that people are seeking, that they're looking for this kind of answer? Are they looking for, they're trying to figure out the answers to the big question. Why are we here? Where are we going when we die?
Some of the people I've talked to are, openly. A lot of them, I think, that a lot of the people I've talked to, I think, really are seeking that, but maybe not consciously, or maybe they haven't framed it in those terms yet. You know, a lot of them get into fandom and get hardcore into games are really using that as their substitute for, you know, that God-shaped vacuum that's in us. They're usually, it's filling in the pain. It's filling in the need for something. You know, if I'm really good at a first-person shooter and I can pwn everybody in the game, you know, that, because I think a lot of it really comes down to meaning in our lives. I think there really is no meaning in your life until you have God in your life, because God defines who we are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, He made us who we are, not the world. The world sends us all these mixed messages about who we really are and what we're here to do. And we're not, you know, the world would turn us into these robots who churn out basically dust, mm-hmm. or what will be dust at some point for no reason. And, you know, you can even look at the secular studies on this. It's becoming more and more clear that the Industrial Revolution has really harmed society more than anything else in terms of turning people into a commodity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I think until you really have God in your life, you're always seeking that value or that worth somewhere mm-hmm. else. And if you're getting that because, oh, I'm an expert on this person's writing, or I'm getting that because I've seen all these movies and I can talk more about it than someone else, or I'm really great at this video game or these video games, I, you know, they're just filling the hole. They may not even realize they're doing it. But more often than not, when you're actually, there's a real opportunity and you can actually start talking about it in real terms, you know, about, well, you know, what, you know, what's important to you? What are you really into? You know, what, and you start to find out where their worth is coming from.
Mm-hmm.
Then you can start saying, well, you know, this is me and this is, and you gotta be, you know, the other thing is you have to be honest with these people about your walk in your life. You can't just walk up and say everything's going to be rosy. You have mm-hmm. to, you know, yeah, there's going to be bad times. There's going to be good times. This isn't some magic book or a magic box or, you know, of course, I think I'm repeating myself more often than not on this, but yeah, there, I think there's definitely, there's definitely interest.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people, especially in the areas where, you know, like horror fiction, where the supernatural isn't completely discounted,
mm-hmm.
a lot of the people I've talked to there actually believe there's a God or something like that. You know, they're willing to, there's got to be something bigger. They just may not have the same
yeah, conception.
Conception of it. And, you know, there, a lot of them are seeking. And the same with, you know, ultimately, yeah, there's a lot of, I think a lot of people are seeking and are receptive, but they hear all the mixed messages, or they have people come and pound them upside the head with the Bible, and they're like, no.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
The reason I ask that question is because in talking with guys like Patrick Herron and Guy mm-hmm. Malone, Mike Heiser, they will find people who are more receptive to their ideas, their research into the connections between the fallen and the UFO, say the modern UFO phenomenon,
right,
which of course is tied to science fiction, or between say the fallen and the existence of the supernatural, which is often portrayed in horror films,
right.
They will find people who are interested in those topics more receptive than people who are in the Christian church.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Patrick Herron gets more interviews on secular radio than he gets from Christian radio. Mike Heiser can't find a Christian publisher to touch the facade.
Mm-hmm. Well, Christians have... How did I hear it put? I got an audio book. Charles Strauss, A Colder War is the name of the piece, and I don't remember who put it together.
Yeah. Strauss is a very gifted writer.
Yes,
yeah.
He is. And there's a... Basically, the story is, what if... Cthulhu mythos were weapons during the Cold War. And it's a cool story, but there's a point where they're talking about how they can explain these beings to the new president. And one of the lines is, he's pious enough not to believe in the supernatural.
That's a brilliant line. That's a brilliant line.
Yeah. And it says so much about what we value in terms of our faith.
Mm-hmm.
It's like we've written off the supernatural. Well, you know, if you don't read the Bible, of course you're not going to believe the supernatural. We might as well all have copies of Jefferson's Bible in front of us,
mm-hmm.
so we don't have to deal with the miracles.
Right.
You know, it's nuts.
Yeah. No, absolutely right. It's as Mike Heiser said, we have demythologized the Bible. In fact, right. the nonfiction book that he's working on is aimed specifically at re-mythologizing the Bible, in the sense putting the supernatural back into the Bible,
right.
which shouldn't be necessary. Sadly, the existence of the supernatural in pop culture and in games and in books or books, movies, whatever.
Right, yeah.
is basically coming at it from a humanist perspective. As you say, you know, people like King Kuntz and others
right.
are tackling these questions and answering them, but answering them from a humanist perspective. There needs to be a way to reach people who are interested in these topics. Mm-hmm. And clearly there's a lot of interest, because not only are video games doing big business.
Oh, huge, yeah.
Not only are horror movies and splatter movies, all the rage, but we see all of these television shows on the Discovery Channel and the History Channel and the Travel Channel for haunted ghost hunting that and UFO discovery and this. There is a huge appetite out there for it,
mm-hmm.
and yet the Christian church has turned its back on those things because, as you say, we are too pious to believe in the supernatural.
Right.
And it's interesting in the different ways that some of us are trying to reach out.
Right.
Sharon and I through the writing that we
right.
do. You through your connections in the fan community.
Right.
Guys like Guy Malone reaching out to the UFO community. Patrick Herron, whose book, I mean, this is what blew me away. Patty was at the International UFO Conference a couple of weeks ago with a book about the Nephilim and the Great Pyramid at Giza.
Yeah.
Like, and he gets invited to a UFO conference? How does that work? Just a few minutes left. Where do you see... what kind of thoughts and ideas have you got for snark-infested waters and maybe not just the podcast, but other areas in which God might be leading you to reach out to the fan community and plant some seeds?
This year I'm actually going back to some conventions. I haven't done that for 5-7 years. Well, I went to one last year, but that's going to be a big change because... Before I became a Christian, I was hardcore into fandom, and I actually help run conventions, whole nine yards.
Wow.
And I stepped away. I mean, God said, no, you can't do this anymore. And I knew why, because a lot of it had become my own personal empire, and, I needed to step away. But now I feel like it's time to start going out. But the other thing, I don't feel like I'm supposed to go out and just beat people over the head either.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing God has always kind of said to me when it's related to this is you have to have credibility. Just like Guy Malone, on secular UFO topics, mm-hmm. as well as spiritual UFO topics, the guy's credible. He knows his stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And in the science fiction and fantasy and horror, anime, all those communities, you need to be credible in some way. And I think that's why, and I've resisted this, I admit, that God is pushing me more in a writing direction.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I can go in and say, yeah, I wrote X book, whether it's right, good or bad, we live in a cult of personality. People mm-hmm. are going to
yeah.
listen to what I have to say more than mm-hmm. they would if I'm just Joe Schmo.
Mm-hmm.
I might be able to influence individuals. And I think that's going to be true with podcasting, too. My show's kind of all over the place at the moment. I've been thinking about focusing it because I do 3 different shows a week. And at this point, I'm kind of evaluating each part of the show and how I want to do things and where God really wants me to go. I think there's a change coming,
mm-hmm.
And I don't know exactly what it's going to be. I do feel like I'm supposed to be focusing more on this writing thing.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, the idea of the Black Awakening keeps coming up in my mind.
Yes.
Maybe that's because I just hang around with just Russ Dizdar too much, but I don't know. there's talk of maybe starting, and this is completely unofficial at this point, a Christian-based horror online magazine that I've been talking to a few people about. And
very interesting.
It Yeah. So there's a lot of things that could happen.
Yeah. Well, I think there's certainly a market for that. And I again, find it a little puzzling that Christians have been staying away from that. I mean, obviously, there's some danger in glorifying it.
Right.
But if you do it well, well, let's face it, there's nothing more horrifying or horrible to contemplate than an eternity spent without God.
Exactly.
And then the plans of the enemy to try to lure us into that doom. There are an endless number of possibilities for, you know, fiction, games, entertainment.
Oh, yeah, whatever. Definitely.
So that would certainly be something that we look forward to. Mm-hmm. Well, I think we can close it out here. We're just about up against the clock. So Taylor Kent, who's excellent podcast, Snark Infested Waters, is available at thesnarkyavenger.com, or Snarky Avenger, not the Snarky Avenger, I'm sorry,
snarkyavenger.com,
or the other long address.
Or misfitchristians.net/podcast/ Snark Infested Waters, but there's a link on the SnarkyVenger.com page.
And there'll be a link at PIDradio.com.
Yep.
Sharon will be back next week.
Cool.
And until then, I'm Derek Gilbert.
And I'm Taylor Kent. And thank you for having me on.
Well, it's been our pleasure. See you again next week. Bye-bye.
Thought she was going back to her quiet hometown of Eden, Indiana, to settle the affairs of her late Aunt Celeste. Instead, she discovers that Eden has literally gone to hell. Two high school students have disappeared, leaving behind only a running car and a bloody shoe. Strange lights have appeared over the town, and the fields of a local farm are marked with blackened circles. Eden County Hospital reports record births, incredibly large babies joining the ranks of a growing number of giants. Many of Eden's leading citizens have been hiding evil secrets, but their behavior has been closely watched by the mysterious Dr. Apollo Bell, head of the Mount Hermon Institute. All of Eden is a war camp, and citizens must choose sides in an eternal battle. Catherine is reunited with her old flame, Joshua Carpenter, the publisher of the Eden Chronicle. They quickly learn their strongest ally may be John Thundercloud, a legless old Winnebago Indian who spends his days writing line after line in a library full of tattered diaries. It's Winds of Evil by Sharon K. Gilbert, book one of the Laodicea Chronicles. Available now online and at bookstores everywhere.
They're coming from the darkness. Over 6,000 years ago, the citizens of Mesopotamia encountered them.
Down through time, tens of thousands of people on every continent of the world have etched their likeness on the walls of caves, chiseled statues of them from solid stone, and prayed prayers to their highest gods to be delivered from them.
But prophecy says they will return, and at a time when Babylon, modern Iraq, and Iran is invaded and destroyed. This spring, exclusively from RaidersNewsUpdate.com, we'll tell you what you need to know about them. In the book-length ebook, Stargates, Ancient Rituals, and Those Invited Through the Portal.